Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A good Monday morning to you, and thanks for choosing Africa Link live from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Our main stories: Mali begins a three-day national mourning period after Friday's hotel attack, which left 19 people dead. But why did jihadist militants pick on Mali?
Mali has close relations with France, and the jihadists may have thought that Mali was a good place in which to achieve a sort of follow-up impact.
Germany's top envoy, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, wraps up his visit to Uganda by calling on Kampala to step up mediation efforts in Burundi.
I hope that you will convince the parties in Burundi to go on in a more reasonable way than they did in that region in the past.
And Ethiopia facing another drought. The stories plus the radio drama Crime Fighters lined up for you. Don't go too far.
Top story.
Searching for clues. Mali on Sunday said investigators are following several leads after at least 19 people were killed in an attack on a luxury hotel claimed by Islamist militant groups. The West African nation also began a three-day national mourning period. Mali's attack came a week after the multiple shootings and bombings in the French capital, Paris. So is there any relation between the two attacks? Abubakar Jallo put that question to Paul Melly, an analyst on Mali at Chatham House in the UK.
Mali has close relations with France, not just political and military, but very strong relationships at the cultural and the personal level. There are very many families in both countries with ties. And so, again, the jihadists may have thought that Mali was a good place in which to achieve a sort of follow-up impact. But there are also local factors at play as well. In the political sense, the jihadists, their room for political maneuver has been reduced, if you like, a bit, by the process of the peace discussions following the Algiers peace accord earlier this year. There have been recently real efforts by the armed groups engaged in the tussle over separatism or not for the north of Mali to make this peace agreement work. And an important meeting between these groups and the government was all taking place actually on Friday in Bamako.
Friday's shooting came after another hotel siege in Savare in August, where 4 Malian soldiers, 5 UN workers and 4 attackers were killed. What is actually happening to that peace deal which was signed, given the fact that there are still Tuareg rebel groups like the Ansar Dine that are very active?
There were two very distinct groups of rebels, if you like, operating in the country over the crisis period over the last several years. There are jihadists who have an agenda to promote, as we know, some form of political regime and social order, and then completely separate are groups that were such as the MNLA and the HCUA that were groups really campaigning for a degree of secular political autonomy for the north or the far northeast of Mali. Basically, and since 2013, when they formally committed themselves to peace negotiations, they have been seen by the Malian government and by the international community as legitimate political partners, whereas the jihadists are not. The jihadists are categorized as terrorists because they have an agenda over which there isn't really any kind of negotiation or compromise scope. Between the two groups, there are fighters who, due to being offered better pay or greater rewards or by personal conviction or for family or clan reasons, have moved back and forth between the secular separatist movements and the jihadist factions. The jihadists are pursuing an agenda of jihad, radical militant fundamentalism, whereas the movements that have been separatist, who are grouped under the CMA alliance, are basically pursuing a political agenda and have reached a formal accommodation with the Malian government over political decentralization for the northeast of Mali.
Paul Melly, Associate Fellow at Chatham House in the UK. The hotel attack in Mali has raised questions about the safety of major tourist destinations, Kenya being one of them. The East African nation has suffered several terrorist attacks which have negatively affected the tourism industry. Our correspondent in the coastal city of Mombasa, Eric Ponda, has been looking into the effects the Mali attack could have on the Kenyan tourism sector.
Tourism is important to Kenya's economy. In the year 2014, the industry generated 561 billion Kenya shillings, equivalent to 5.5 billion US dollars. This is 10.5% of the GDP. But in early 2015, attacks on main tourist destinations, including the coastal town of Mombasa, forced hotels and tourist attractions to shut down. This led to a sharp decrease in the industry. International travel bans have, however, been lifted, and airlines have started flying into tourist destinations. The Minister for Tourism, Phyllis Kandie, says the government remains optimistic.
We are on a recovery path. And as we implement our strategy, I can say with confidence that, yes, we have the capacity to manage the boom. We're working together to ensure that we bring back the tourists into this country, both international, from Africa, and domestic. The world has confidence in Kenya.
Following the siege at the Hotel Radisson Blu in Bamako, Mali, concerns of the safety of the hotels and other tourist destinations in volatile parts of the world have grown. In Mombasa, security at all tourist destinations have been beefed up for fear of similar style attack. But according to Kazungu Samuel, a hotel owner in Kilifi, 60 kilometers north of Mombasa, Kenya will feel the effect of the recent terror attacks in the world.
Of course, it will have a devastating effect on the already ailing tourism at the coast of Kenya. The tourism sector was already picking up, especially for this festive season. But the terror attacks in France and Mali, of course, it will create fear for people to go out to the beaches, to the hotels. So it will have a very big impact on tourism, especially this festive season.
There are added security at all hotels and major public places in the rest of Kenya. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab threatened it will strike in the heart of Kenya after it carried out an attack at the Garissa University College campus in April, killing at least 140 people. Kenyan forces are still in Somalia in an African Union mission fighting against Al-Shabaab. The Islamist militant said it will continue to carry out attacks in Kenya until Nairobi withdraws its troops from Somalia. With the terror attacks in France and Mali, Kenya's porous border with Somalia, where most of the major tourist destinations are, currently on edge.
Eric Ponda in Mombasa, Kenya.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
And now to Uganda, where Germany's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, was on a two-day visit. Steinmeier ended his Africa tour on Sunday, which took him to Mozambique, Uganda, and Tanzania. Although trade was high on Steinmeier's agenda, Germany's top diplomat did highlight the high level of corruption in Uganda, as well as calling for stability in Burundi and the Great Lakes region. From Kampala, Alex Jita reports.
German Foreign Affairs Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier led a trade delegation to Uganda to study investment opportunities in Uganda, chaperoned by German business moguls from the engineering, minerals and health sectors. Steinmeier spearheaded talks between German investors and Ugandan businesses. He said there are greater business prospects in Uganda, but urged that these prospects cannot be harnessed without stability in the region.
We all know the sometimes bad news, but also the advantages of regional cooperation. In Europe, we were dealing with the Greek crisis, and we have our experience that the way to find common answers is not easy.
Steinmeier called on Uganda to take on a leading role in bringing stability in East Africa.
I hope that you will convince the parties in Burundi to go on in a more reasonable way than they did in that region in the past.
There are already German businesses operating in Uganda, but these are mostly construction companies, medical groups, and IT firms. Uganda's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Sam Kutesa, also flanked by Ugandan businessmen from the construction and minerals sector, said Uganda needs more German investment.
We have welcomed the role and importance of Germany to support Uganda's socio-economic development and transformation. We also called on German companies and businesses to come and invest in Uganda, especially in strategic sectors such as energy, manufacturing, infrastructure, agriculture and agro-processing, ICT, and others.
A German company, Gof Engineering, seized the opportunity and signed a contract with the Ugandan government to construct a modern inland port outside Kampala. The port, the first of its kind in Uganda, will link with planned railway networks to sea ports in Kenya and Tanzania. In this extract from a video production, Gof Engineering Company presented a short film showcasing their plans for the port, which will be largely funded by the government of Germany.
The area surrounding the port will be developed into a business park with office blocks, logistic warehouses, distribution centers, and light industries such as car assembly plants and communication centers.
Germany is already providing direct bilateral support to Uganda. Berlin provides funds to train government staffs in human resource management, social development, and health. Before leaving Uganda for Tanzania, Steinmeier met with President Yoweri Museveni and two other presidential candidates, Dr. Kizza Besigye and Amama Mbabazi, behind closed doors.
Alex Jita in Kampala. Let's remain in East Africa and head to Ethiopia, which is currently facing severe food shortages. The Ethiopian government said it has purchased 1 million tons of wheat in an effort to deal with the food scarcity affecting nearly 8 million people. The drought has been caused by less rainfall in the Horn of Africa as a result of the El Nino weather patterns. Koleta Onjoy reports from Addis Ababa.
The rainy season in 2015 in Ethiopia was poor, leading to drought in some parts of the country. There have been reports of the loss of livestock and human lives because of drought-related causes. The affected areas are mostly the eastern part, which is a pastoralist area. The United Nations says that 15 million people are now in need of urgent food aid in Ethiopia. In response, the Ethiopian government has moved to start buying food from other countries in a bid to feed its people. So far, the Ethiopian Minister for Information, Getachew Reda, says 1 million tons of grains has already been purchased.
The order we have placed, and the amount which has already arrived at the ports, and the ones which are likely to arrive the next week or so, will carry us until the first months of 2016, when we'll continue to replenish.
Ethiopia has tasked the National Committee of Disaster Preparedness to have weekly meetings to assess the situation of the drought effects. So far, different international organizations and parties have pledged their willingness to help Ethiopia avert the effects of the food insecurity in the drought-stricken areas. However, Ethiopian Minister for Communication Getachew says that the country will make its own strides and not wait entirely for these pledges to be honored.
And our expectation, of course, and hope is that our partners will make good on their promise, and whatever support they are going to bring will help us replenish these resources. But even if that fails to happen, because we know the bureaucratic intricacies that are involved in making sure such purchase by international community happens in time. So we are ready for any eventuality. What that means is we'll be out on a shopping spree once again. That the government is not just willing, but also ready to do.
The drought season is projected to be as challenging as the 1984 drought crisis that hit Ethiopia. As the government of Ethiopia is battling drought, there are already signs of El Nino rains in the country, a phenomenon that is known to be destructive too.
DW correspondent Koleta Wanjohi in Addis Ababa. It's time now to catch up with the criminals in our Learning by Ear radio drama, Crime Fighters.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Welcome to the fourth episode of our series, Crime Fighters, The Radical Journey. In Kululaland, the young police officers, Jude and Brenda, are making progress with their investigation into the death of Zora Kasim, a female suicide bomber. Last time, Jude went to a youth hangout and ran into an old friend from high school. Bobo is one of the many disgruntled young people in the country who have no jobs and no perspectives and are angry at the government. Meanwhile, Brenda interrogated Eric, a member of the terrorist group Swart Sages. Eric told the police that high-ranking politicians have been financing terrorist activities. Among them is someone very close to Zora, her own father, Honorable Kasim. Today's episode is called It's a Hard Life. Let's hear first what the police team has up its sleeve.
Inspectors Jude and Brenda, this case isn't moving as fast as I would like. But we have to do the best we can. The girl's father, Honorable Kasim, came in to see me without warning. I was pretty surprised and he didn't say much. Now I keep replaying our conversation in my head and wondering whether I missed anything.
Mr. Commissioner, sir, we do seem to have made an initial breakthrough with the confession by the suspect, Eric Mudu. He told us that Honorable Kasim has been helping to finance the terrorist group. But can we rely on that kind of information? And also, would a father really sacrifice his daughter like that? Make her carry out a suicide bombing?
Strange things do happen. But Honorable Kasim was close to his daughter. Zora was the only girl.
Well, this is what we have to investigate.
Yes, sir. And what about the other politicians Eric named as being linked to the Swad sages?
It's very tricky. The thing is, we can't go public with this information right now. Not until we have carried out a thorough investigation. We have to find out whether they are really involved, and if so, how deep that involvement is.
Sir, I think there's something serious going on in some of the young people's hangouts.
I'm listening, Jude.
I went to one of them, called Ziggy's, and when I arrived, I ran into Bobo, an old classmate of mine. We talked a little about politics and the economy, the usual stuff about the discontented youth. But then he invited me to a meeting with other young people this evening. He said they were onto something that's going to make things better. Sort of a revolution, he said.
Why do you think it's something serious?
Because he said some things that made me think there could be a connection between the suicide bombing and this group gathering he's invited me to. He was talking about the youth taking drastic measures.
Inspector, it sounds as if you are onto something. What time are you meeting them?
7 o'clock. But sir, I didn't tell my former classmate that I was with the police. So I'd like to volunteer to go undercover. I want them to trust me enough to give me all the details. That way, we'll get to the bottom of things quickly.
Jude, are you sure you can do this? Let's not be hasty. Go to the meeting this evening first. Then we'll think about where we go from there.
Mother, I am off. I am meeting some friends. Maybe one of them can give me a tip about a day job somewhere.
Don't worry, Bobo. I'm sure you'll get a job soon. Don't lose hope. Have you had anything to eat? I can warm up the leftovers of the bean stew if...
Don't worry, Mother. I'll eat out tonight.
All right, then, if you're sure. You have a great evening.
Bye, Mother.
Yes? Who's there? Bobo, is that you?
Good afternoon, madam.
Ah, landlord. Good afternoon. I'm so sorry.
Don't start apologizing. I just saw your son and he pretended not to recognize me. I just dropped by to let you know that I'm going to throw you out at the end of the month if you don't pay me what you owe.
Please, sir, I beg you. Don't do this to
us. I've been patient long enough, don't you think? If I carry on like this, I'll go bankrupt too.
Mommy, someone's throwing up.
Oh my God. Landlord, excuse me. Somo's my youngest. He's been sick for several days. We can't even afford to take him to the doctor.
Madam, I wish him a speedy recovery. That's all I can do. I have to go. I just hope I've made myself clear. Goodbye.
Oh God. What am I going to do now? This is all too much.
So, Jude, don't ask any questions. Just follow me quietly. I know you haven't yet made up your mind to join, but I am bringing you here as a friend. It's our little secret.
Don't worry, Bobo. I understand. You know me, no one will notice. I'll just pretend.
I know. Keep calm anyway. And no pressure. You'll join when you are ready.
Okay, no problem. So who's speaking now?
That's our great warlord, Scambo. Come on, let's get closer. You will see. He has all the answers to our problems.
Have no water to drink.
They feast on meat and expensive food, while we, the people, have nothing to eat. Who is a citizen? What is a citizen, my brothers and sisters? Is a person who has been denied a citizen's right still a citizen? How can we reinstate the citizen if we don't take back the rights that have been stolen from us? If we don't take over and rule and protect ourselves and defend our territories, why should we be treated as guests at a table that rightfully belongs to us? Why should we eat crumbs while there's a chance for us to eat straight from the kitchen? To those going on the first assignment, the initiation test, I say, have no fear. Think of it as a pleasant journey, and you will achieve your destiny. Have a good evening, everyone. Good evening.
Yes?
Mr. Commissioner, sir, you said to call you when Honorable Kasim arrived. Should I bring him to your office?
Yes, yes, bring him in.
Right away, sir.
Inspector Brenda, Honorable Kasim is on his way.
But, Mr. Commissioner, sir, why have we just invited him in for a chat? Shouldn't we take him into custody? I mean, we've got evidence against him.
What evidence? The testimony of a terrified suspect? We need more than that. Besides, even if he's giving the sword sages money or weapons, it doesn't directly explain why his daughter carried out the attack, or who made her do it. Oh, Honorable Kasim, please come in.
Mr. Commissioner, how do you do?
I'm fine, thank you. You know Inspector Brenda. She's heading up your daughter's case under my supervision.
Good afternoon, sir.
How do you do, Inspector?
Very well, thank you, sir.
Please have a seat. Honorable Kasim, I won't take up too much of your time. You've described to us how close you are to your daughter Zora and how introverted she was. But was there anyone apart from you whom she saw as a role model? Someone who might have influenced her negatively?
You know, it still feels as if I'm in a nightmare. As if maybe I'll wake up and see that this isn't really happening.
It could even be someone you don't suspect. Can you think of anything that struck you as odd? Anything at all? Her relationship with a close family member, perhaps? Or a new friend?
If there had been anything like that, she would have told me, I'm sure.
Honorable sir, it's very important that you try to think back. Any information you can give us will help us get to the truth.
What is this? Am I on trial here or what? My family and I are suffering. I don't know whether our lives will ever be the same again.
It's all right, Honorable Kasim. No need to get worked up. It's our duty to try and get to the bottom of this, and that's what we are doing.
And if you continue with this line of questioning, I'll have to press charges.
That brings us to the end of this fourth episode. What will happen next? Join us again next time to find out. If you'd like to listen again to this episode or previous ones, just go to our website, dw.com/crimefighters. Goodbye for now.
And Crime Fighters will return on Thursday at the same time. And now a reminder of our main stories. Mali has said it is following several leads after Friday's hotel attack, which left 19 people dead. Germany's Foreign Affairs Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier has ended his Africa tour by urging Africa to tackle corruption and support stability. Ethiopia has bought 1 million tons of wheat as it battles one of the worst droughts in decades. And that's how we end this edition of Africa Link. Send us your opinions, suggestions and thoughts on the stories or the program by writing an SMS to country code 49160957595510. A letter to Africa Link, DW53110, Bonn, Germany. You can, of course, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com. Thank you for listening. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Take care.